Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. Today is December 10th, 2014, and it looks like the markets were down more than a little bit. The Dow closing at 17,533, the S&P at 2,026, and the NASDAQ at 4,684. Tonight we're talking about the top 10 estate planning ideas to consider. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. We are taking calls, but it's also tied to our pledge drive. So you can call in and ask a question. When you call in and get anyone in Pledge Central, you can just tell them that you have a question for Lori, and they will write the question down and bring it into the studio for us. So don't hesitate in calling, because this is a great topic we have tonight, and so it is a great time to call and ask questions. I have a guest with me this evening. I have Anthony Rahuba. He's an attorney with Fitzpatrick, Lenz & Buba. So again, it's a great time to call tonight. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments, and while we do typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and we will do our best to answer them. The number to call in is 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. Attorney Anthony Rahuba, again, is from Fitzpatrick, Lenz & Buba. He's a member of the firm's Estate Planning and Administration Group, and he focuses in part on taxation, estate planning, and administration of estates and trust, oil and gas law, succession planning for businesses, and special needs and elder law. And Anthony has been on the show before. Welcome back, Anthony.
Thank you, Lori.
Thank you for coming. I appreciate it. Anthony helped us with the topic idea tonight, and he helped with the outline as well, because he and I are both running on vapors, folks. So, listeners, if you have questions, we would love your calls. And again, you can do that through 610-758-8810. We are going to fill in the blanks between those calls with some topics, some ideas to consider for estate planning, top ideas that Anthony came up with that really apply to anyone, despite what your net worth is. For many, many years, people felt like they, you know, estate planning was just for the rich, and that is not the case.
That's certainly true. A lot of times I have clients that'll say to me, you know, I'm not rich, why do I need to do estate planning? Or I don't have any money. What estate do I have to plan for? But estate planning, as we'll discuss, is a lot more than just how much money you can pass and how much savings of, you know, taxes you can save. So we'll discuss it as we proceed tonight.
Okay, we can jump into it. But Anthony, I kind of stepped over giving you the opportunity to tell the audience a little bit about yourself, if you'd like to share a little bit about what you do.
Absolutely. I'm a big Phillies fan and disappointed that Jimmy Rollins just got traded, but that's another story.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
But it's time to move on. You know, all good things must come to an end. But that aside, I am an attorney, as Lori said, at Fitzpatrick, Lenz & Buba. I'm in the Trust and Estate Department and specializing mostly in the estate planning and administration area, but I do get involved in, of course, business succession planning, and I do a lot of special needs planning for families with children with disabilities, and also the elder law area, which is planning for family members, typically elderly family members, I should say, that have to enter a nursing home and preserving assets. So, I enjoy the area. I love helping people out and helping them save money and protect it from the government,
yeah,
if you will.
And getting it in the right hands, too, because estate planning is also about making sure that it's getting to the beneficiaries that you think it's going to be. So let's talk about what's the first idea you have.
Yeah, so what I came up with was kind of like a top 10 list of ideas, issues, questions that people should be thinking about and considering. And one of the first things I like to go over with clients is, you know, not all assets are going to pass according to your will. A lot of times people think, oh, I have a will, that'll take care of it. And you have to understand that the way you own assets, the way they're titled, is going to dictate how they're going to pass. Such as if you own property jointly, it's going to pass most likely, unless you title it specifically, but most likely it's going to pass directly to that joint owner upon your death. Or assets such as life insurance, retirement assets. When you open those accounts, most of the time you'll fill out a form that's called a beneficiary designation form. And on that form you say who you want those assets to pass to. A lot of times people just fill in a name and never think about it again, and they don't realize that when they do their will, that will has no control over where that asset's going to pass, such as the life insurance or retirement assets. So we want to make sure that people understand that all those assets have to be reviewed to understand where they're going to pass and how and to whom.
And can I throw in a pitch for careful planning in this area, especially with beneficiary designations? Anthony mentioned naming a beneficiary and then making sure it's coordinated with your will. And if you make any changes to your will and you think that's going to apply, as he said, it might not apply to those beneficiary designations. But another opportunity, Anthony, that I think a lot of people forget about is the contingent beneficiary designation, and how attorneys, especially with family members doing sometimes family estate planning, when you're looking at family members who might have enough assets and might not need it, but we don't know, the contingent beneficiary gives us the ability to maybe make a disclaimer. So if you want to talk about that just for a sec, because it can get really fun.
Sure. Fun to some people, I guess. The contingent beneficiary, of course, sometimes can be very important because, you know, let me just take an example. Sometimes we'll have the primary beneficiary be a spouse. Now, in a situation where you say you have children that are minors, say they're 16, 14, whatever they may be, you might not necessarily want to name the children directly as the beneficiaries, because what will happen is they'll get that money at 18 years old. And by changing that contingent beneficiary to say trust, or and having it work in accordance with what you've done in your documents, your wills and trust, those assets that are passing under the contingent beneficiary could pass directly to a trust, say, for those children. And now that's just one example, but you mentioned disclaimer. Sometimes we'll have spouses be the primary, the surviving spouse, I should say, be the primary beneficiary. And then you could have a trust for the spouse be the contingent beneficiary. That enables the spouse to do what's called a disclaimer, which effectively means the spouse is saying, I don't want the asset. And then the asset will then pass to the contingent beneficiary. The whole idea is there is no direction on the part of the surviving spouse. The surviving spouse is not directing that it go to that contingent beneficiary. All they're saying is, I don't want it. And then the beneficiary designation controls there. And that's typically done for tax saving reasons, for tax planning reasons, which, you know, we're not really going to get too much into that.
Yeah, yeah.
But just to know that the contingent beneficiary can be important and should be reviewed with your tax advisor or attorney.
Okay, we mentioned children. Let's talk about your next top 10.
So one of the second thing I have on my list here is, you know, the question is, should I create trust for my children or possibly grandchildren? And the reason clients like to do that and we like to plan for that is that what I said before was about children getting assets at 18 or even 21. By having trust provisions in your documents, you can prolong those assets and preserve them in a trust type vehicle, so that the children or grandchildren won't get those assets until 25, 35, 45, whatever age you say, you could have that go for their entire life. And a lot of clients, you know, I should say most clients will say something like 35 years old. Okay, at that age, my child's old enough. But then again, there's reasons that you might want it to stay in trust, so it's
possibly protect it from a divorced spouse of the child or creditors of or other creditors of that child. And another reason is maybe that child has a significant estate themselves. So why dump money into their estate, have it held in trust, and then it'll protect it from taxes when that child dies? So there's a whole host of reasons why you might want to have it in trust, but it's something that should be considered when you are setting up your estate plan.
Okay, folks, we are talking about the top 10 estate planning items for you to consider, ideas, and we have with us in the studio this evening Anthony Rahuba. He's an attorney with Fitzpatrick Lentz & Buba, and it's a great time to call for a number of reasons. You can call in with questions to 610-758-8810. We love listeners' questions. You can just let the folks who are answering the phones know that you want to ask a question to Anthony or myself, and they will write it down and bring it into the studio, and that's 610-758-8810. You can also call in to Pledge Central and help us make a happy holiday season for WDIY. We have a lot of volunteers working here. We have volunteers answering the phone to help us with our December pledge drive. We have a number of opportunities for you to contribute to the station. You can do it automatically through the by using a credit card and becoming a sustaining member. You can go on our website at wdiy.org. You can become a member if you're not currently one. You can make an additional contribution, especially for folks who work at corporations that do matching contributions. We're coming up on year end. If you were someone who has made donations during the year and haven't put in your match, you want to make sure you put in for the match. And it's a great time of year to do this. So we appreciate folks who call in and help. 610-758-8810. It looks like you would also be entered in to win a $500 Apple gift card. That's enough to get an iPad mini, an iPad 2. Maybe towards a phone. If you're a lucky winner, you can pick the Apple gear of your choice in time for the holidays. So please support your WDIY listening. Make your pledge today, $60, $120, or whatever is comfortable to you, and get a chance to win a $500 Apple gift card from WDIY. Again, 610-758-8810, or give online at wdiy.org. And we appreciate you listening. I appreciate the listeners of Your Financial Choices. I'm here every week for you. Try to be here every week for you and bring wonderful guests like Anthony Rahuba, who can help us out and bring all the great information that we do here to help you make better financial choices in your everyday life. So we are talking about the top 10 estate planning ideas with Anthony, and he's from Fitzpatrick Lentz & Buba, and we've gone over the importance of understanding what assets you own, how they're titled, how they're passing to your beneficiaries and loved ones. It's not through your will, and we can't always, it's not always through your will, and we can't say that enough. People think that it will always go via the will. And I want to jump back to that for just one moment, because Anthony, the other thing I often hear is people think that if they're married, the assets automatically go to their wife or their husband. So they also think they don't need a will. Can we kind of bust that bubble for them in Pennsylvania?
Sure. First of all, yeah, you are correct, Lori, that it's not always true that when you die, if you die without a will, that your assets, and assuming you're married, all your assets are going to pass to your spouse. Now, of course, if you own everything jointly with your spouse, it's all going to pass to your spouse. Or if you have a beneficiary designation naming your spouse, that's going to pass to your spouse. But assets that you own in your own name that don't have a beneficiary designation and are not owned jointly might not all pass to your spouse, because Pennsylvania law provides that if you are married and have children, for example, and you have assets in your own name. Let's just say I had an account with $500,000 in my name, and there's no beneficiary, not owned jointly. Well, that account, and I'm generalizing here, not taking into consideration expenses of the estate and all that, but generally that $500,000 account would pass pretty much 50% to your spouse and then 50% to your children. Now, again, there's some little exceptions mm-hmm. in there for the spouse, but I'm not going to get into that. But not everything, the key point is there, not everything that you individually own will automatically pass to your spouse.
Okay, and then our second point that Anthony brought up was, you know, whether or not you need to consider setting up trust for your children or grandchildren. And to the point we mentioned earlier, if there was no will and there was an asset that was held in individually, and there is some split between a spouse and a children, and those children are minor children, you really need to do your estate planning. So the third item on your list, Anthony, let's talk about guardians for minor children. What happens in that case?
Well, one of the big things, this is one of the main reasons why people initially come in to have their wills done, with especially younger couples when they come in, is that now I have children, now I need to name guardians. And it's a great point, because you don't necessarily know who is going to be appointed by the court as guardian of your children, personal guardian, even guardian of the estate as well. But more important a lot of times is the person. Who's going to take care of your minor children? Who are they going to live with? Well, in your will, you can specify who you want to be, who those persons will be. And that's, like I said, that's one of the main reasons young couples come in initially, because most young couples haven't amassed a lot of wealth yet. They're not worried about taxes. You know, what they're worried about is who's going to have personal custody of my children and who's going to manage the money for them.
Mm-hmm. We have a question from Mary, and can we take that question live? No. Okay, Mary called in, and she had a question about 403B plans. She's leaving a job in a year or two, and is it a good idea to start a 403B now? Now, Mary, if you're able to listen while you're driving in the car, what happens is a 403B is typically a retirement plan that you might have at some kind of governmental entity or nonprofit organization. Usually we see those at universities or hospitals. Sometimes we'll have other employers that are, or teachers. Thank you, Anthony. Sometimes we'll have other employers who have a 401K. These retirement plans are very similar these days, 401Ks and 403Bs. So when you ask, you said you're leaving your job in a year or two, is it a good idea to start a 403B now? Yes, if you have the means to contribute, quite often an employer will match that contribution. So you definitely want to put enough money into a plan to get a match. So that is the main reason. The other reason is to get in a good habit of saving. Now, I don't know your particular situation. If you told me you were in debt up the wazoo, I might have different recommendations for you. But Anthony, go ahead and
yeah, I'm not sure. With a 403B, it's very, very similar to 401K. The difference, I don't believe that a 403B, that the company or the employer matches you. So, and I know a lot about this. My wife is a teacher, actually,
okay.
and has a 403B, and you can contribute, and it's all pre-tax, you know, dollars,
right.
And the money grows tax-free. But when you do take it out, it will be income. But there is no match. Like where, for example, 401K, you might put money in, and
right.
Your employer will match you up to 5%, say, of what you're putting in.
Yeah, because the teachers, they're putting the match, in essence, into the pension plan.
That's correct.
So this was an opportunity for teachers to be able to put money into a separate retirement account. But yeah, you're right. So
right.
You might not be getting the match, Mary, but it still might be a great idea to start saving. And then if you're, you know, after a couple of years, you might have saved, you know, a few thousand dollars. You can always move that to your next employer or roll it over to an IRA. And that also would apply then to Anthony, when she's setting up a 403B plan, when she's setting that up with her employer, they're going to ask her to name a beneficiary, a primary, and a contingent. And this is the exact kind of example.
That's correct. It's a retirement plan that would have a beneficiary designation. So
yeah,
at that point, you would name who you want it to pass to.
And it's someone who's 43, and sometimes we're not thinking estate, like, oh, we're going to die. No, but at 43, anything could happen, so it's always good to get that taken care of and get that in order. So we've talked about three of the top ideas. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can call in and pledge, or you can call in and ask a question to us. Go ahead, Anthony.
I was going to say, I'm kind of going a little out of order here, passing
okay.
notes to Lori.
That's okay.
But for the fourth topic, I wanted to, a lot of times when I meet with clients, they want to know what taxes are going to be imposed at my death. And I'll simply go through some of them. And some of them may apply, and some of them most of the time won't apply to most people just because of the way the rules are written now. But first of all, we have a federal estate tax in this country. So any U.S., and I'm going to simplify, any U.S. citizen here, when you die, you can leave assets to your beneficiaries as long as you don't have over $5.34 million, your assets, you're not going to be taxed on those assets. Anything over that, though, will be taxed at a 40% tax rate. So that's the big tax that you always want to avoid. Nowadays, though, married couples can pass double that, approximating, but $10.6 million or so, tax-free. So as you can imagine, very small sliver of this country is ever going to be imposed or hit with federal estate tax.
But for us, living in Pennsylvania, we have Pennsylvania inheritance tax. So let's talk about that for a minute.
Sure. So Pennsylvania has what's called an inheritance tax, and that applies to Pennsylvania residents. So any taxes, any assets that you have that you leave to your beneficiaries is going to be taxed, and the tax rate is based on who receives the asset. So if you leave everything to your spouse, you have zero tax. It's a 0% tax rate. If you leave everything to children, grandchildren, parents, grandparents, anybody in a direct line to you, that's a 4.5% tax rate. If you leave assets to siblings, brothers, sisters, that's a 12% tax rate. Everybody else is 15, excluding charities, of course. If that's a 0%, you get a deduction. But everybody else is 15, nieces, nephews, friends, anybody else. 15% rate is on the net amount passing to them.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of times people will think that because they've paid an inheritance tax on something that they get all the assets, you know, free and clear, and they don't have to pay any more taxes. But that's not always the case.
Yeah, it's not. It really depends on what your will says. The will, you know, the will can provide how you want the taxes to be paid, where they're going to be paid from. So it's important to review what your will says, that what's referred to as the tax clause.
For paying the inheritance tax. But even after that, so let's pretend I've inherited, I'm the daughter and I've inherited a $100,000 IRA from my mother, and the inheritance tax was paid by the estate, or if there was no estate, it might come out of, you know, my own funds or the IRA. So now I have this $100,000 IRA. I have had people who think that they can cash in the IRA and not have any income tax. So there are certain kinds of assets, folks, that retain their tax character even beyond death. So if your loved one that you've inherited from did not pay income tax on things like an IRA or a 401k, they got the tax benefit during their lifetime. That is something called income in respect of a decedent. It retains its character, and it's going to be income taxable to you when you eventually take distributions from those accounts if they were income taxable. If you inherit a Roth IRA, that it does not have income tax characteristics that are beyond death. It's tax-free when you take it out to the deceased. It would be income tax free to you when you go to take a distribution.
Yeah.
So
for your example, Lori, you know, $100,000 IRA, let's just say you're unrelated to that decedent. Now you're looking at a 15% tax, so $15,000, assuming it's not paid out of the estate. If it's paid out of the estate, right, it doesn't come out of your own pocket. But then, like you said, when you pull that money out, that's all income taxable. So you have to report those withdrawals or the money you're taking on your personal income tax return.
So that's why it's important, too, when you're reviewing estate planning, to understand how all of these assets are flowing and to what beneficiaries. Because, Anthony, that could make a real difference in how a couple might come in and plan for the eventual disposition of assets if perhaps they have one child who's very well off and another child maybe who hasn't worked forever and ever. They could actually technically split up the assets to give maybe an income taxable asset to the child who has zero tax and maybe something like cash to the child who has too much.
That's right.
Or not to the other, one or the other. You can split it up a number of different ways. So it's always good and important to do your estate planning. Jeff, do I take another break now? Okay. Folks, we are taking questions, and Neil has informed me that we can take live questions on air now. So if you have questions for Anthony this evening, talking about estate planning, our favorite subject, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can also use that same number to call in for a pledge, to pledge to our year-end pledge drive to help us out at WDIY. It's a great time of year. So many people are thinking about doing charitable deductions at the end of the year so they can get that income tax deduction in. It's like a win-win. Win for WDIY, win for you, because you get a deduction on your tax return if you itemize. And it helps us out, helps you out, and you're helping a good cause here at WDIY. We are listener-supported community public radio. We have many, many volunteers who help keep this station running and going. And even the folks who work here are working all the time, it seems like. So everyone's working really hard here, all for you, the listener. And we certainly hope that you appreciate that and will show your appreciation in contributing through the website at wdiy.org. You can go online and make an online pledge or donation. You could become a member if you haven't before. And I know I've had some recent listeners who've told me that they've just recently discovered us. So if you have found that you like this programming, like this show in particular, please call in and add your support, show your support by becoming a member. And you can also do that through calling 610-758-8810. If you do, you will be entered to win a $500 Apple gift card, and you can use that gift card to pick the Apple gear of your choice in time for the holidays. You can make your pledge at $60, $120, or whatever is comfortable to get a chance to win that gift card. And you can do that through 610-758-8810 or online at wdiy.org. And I have always had great listeners to this program who've always come through whenever we have needed support and to show our support. So I really hope that some of our listeners tonight, if you're not a member, please consider becoming one. And then you get emails saying what's coming up, and you find out who's coming up, you know, on Monday, who's going to be on Wednesday nights, what topic we're covering. You can also go online and listen to old podcasts, and I have listeners who tell me that they download them when they're traveling and listen to the podcast. I recently had someone told me they listened to the geothermal show that we had done several weeks ago. So lots of good information there, and you can find all different kinds of topics. So we have with us in the studio this evening Anthony Rahuba. Do I need to go to a break, Jeff? Do you need to go? Go ahead if you want to. Take a little break.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
We're going back on.
And welcome back to the show, folks. We just took a little break here. If you want to call in with questions, we are here live. The phone number is 610-758-8810. If you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can just give your question to Neil or whoever's answering the phones back there for us, and they will bring the question into the studio for us. We are talking about the top 10 estate planning ideas for you to consider. We have in the studio with us this evening Anthony Rahuba. He's an attorney with Fitzpatrick, Lentz and Buba. And Anthony has had numerous accolades. You can find more about Anthony on their website, which, Anthony, your website is
flblaw.com.
flblaw, L-A-W. Dot com. So you can find more information about Anthony there. So We are talking about the top 10 estate planning ideas. We've talked about what assets do you own, how will they pass upon your death, depending on whether it's in your name alone, you through your will, through life insurance, beneficiary designations, retirement account beneficiary designations, joint property. Should you create trust for your children, for your grandchildren, to protect them for various reasons, either maturity or special needs, to preserve the assets a little bit longer? Should you name a guardian for your minor children? You do that typically through your estate planning documents. We've talked a little bit about the death taxes, as I call them, on inheritance, where federal estate taxes and Pennsylvania inheritance tax. We also have our New Jersey listeners. You know that you have an inheritance tax there, but you also have an estate tax in New Jersey. And I think a lot of people in New Jersey forget that if you have an estate over $675,000, and these days you can get there very quickly, when you're including life insurance and retirement accounts and things like that. In New Jersey, if you have an estate over $675,000, you have different rules that apply to you, and you have to file a New Jersey estate tax return. So you want to keep that in mind as well. And not forgetting that even if you have death taxes, there may be income taxes that continue to apply. Anthony, one of the things that comes up quite often, people will ask, do I have to do a living trust? And interestingly, we have a call that's coming through on line one. We have Jeff in Macungie. Jeff, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Hi, and we were just going to start talking about trust. So what's your question?
Well, perfect timing. So I have a revocable trust right now that's set up for my wife and myself because we're a blended family.
Okay.
And we wanted to make sure that if one of us died, that the other spouse's family who was not the surviving would be protected, and you know the assets would pass jointly to all the stepchildren and children. Mm-hmm. So we set that up, and my question is two things. One is, I'm trying to understand how I should be titling my assets to go into that, like my 401k, the house, other things like that. Should I put them in to be the main beneficiary, or should I do it like I heard the discussion earlier where maybe it goes to my spouse and then the trust is a contingent on that? I wasn't quite sure what was the best way to do it and whether there was any tax consequences of having it go directly to the trust, like having the house in the trust name versus my wife's name and then my wife putting it in the trust, that type of thing.
Well,
and then the second part of that question was just, is there any impact on this whole thing with elder planning for like when we may need to go to a nursing home or something?
Well, there's a lot of moving parts in that question, Jeff. just so you know, first of all, I don't know what type of trust you have. Whether it's I think you said revocable trust. I don't know. Is it a joint trust?
It's a joint trust, and it's just revocable in our lifetime. Once one of us dies, it becomes irrevocable.
All right. So you're saying when one of you dies, all the assets in the trust become irrevocable. But is it then the question is, are half of the assets considered yours, half of them considered hers? So her half isn't irrevocable. I'd have to.
It would all be irrevocable. Okay. All the assets are jointly owned, and they go in there, and everything that we own was we have to put into the trust. We haven't put them into the trust yet, so we haven't put some bank accounts in there, but we haven't really fully vested the trust at this point because we, have IRA accounts and the house and other assets that we haven't titled to the trust yet, and that's what I'm trying to figure out the best way to do.
Okay, well, let me just say this. IRAs, 401ks, you can't title in the name of a trust. They have to be individually owned, so you can't change the titling of it.
I'm not talking about changing I'm talking about the beneficiary.
Because at first you said titling. So the beneficiary, yes, you can name the benefit. Like if you had a 401k account, 401k plan or an IRA in your name, you could certainly name the trust as the beneficiary. Now, one little wrinkle with the 401k is you do have to have your spouse's consent to name somebody other than the spouse. Okay? Because there's certain federal laws that protect a spouse with a 401k, meaning that the spouse has to consent to naming somebody other than that spouse.
Yes.
So you do know that.
Since we did the joint trust, we're both aligned to that. We're just, again, trying to understand, is it better to do it as the primary, or is it better to do it as it's to my wife's name so it would pass to her, and then she could fund the trust with it when one of us passed? I'm assuming I'm going first, but you never know.
Yeah, I mean,
It depends. I hate to use the typical lawyer answer. It depends, because each situation is different. I'd have to see the type of trust, what the trust wording says, because sometimes when you pay a retirement type plan to a trust, you're gonna get hit with income taxes that, you know, and you're gonna accelerate the income taxes on that trust unless there's proper wording in the trust. So I'd have to see that trust to really answer that question. But generally, yeah, you could do that and have the distributions made directly to the trust over, depending on whose life expectancy you're using. So it's a very technical question, so I'd have to really see the document itself.
You know, Jeff, can I jump in here for a second?
Sure.
Because what happens is, it sounds like you went possibly to an attorney to help you with the trust.
Yes, and the attorney threw up the test.
Normally, it's in the best interest of everyone if you work with the attorney to help kind of make sure you understand the flow chart of the assets, because what happens sometimes is attorneys will write up the documents and then the clients don't get back to them with, you know, the subsequent direction of titling or beneficiary designations. They think, okay, I have my document, I'm good now. But that document's not going to have any purpose at all if you don't end up putting anything in the trust, either through the titling or through the beneficiary designation. But the other thing that you need to keep in mind is, you kind of have to really have that picture. Take an inventory of your assets, how they're titled, and how you really want them to go to those separate families. Because if, for example, you kind of were alluding to, if we had the primary beneficiary a spouse and the contingent beneficiary the trust, once your spouse is the primary beneficiary, again, your trust could be null and void, because if the primary gets access to the accounts, that they could do whatever they want with it then.
Well, you're right.
Yeah.
And obviously, we do have to trust each other at some point. I think we do. I think it's when we were concerned that when we became older and we wanted to make sure that, you know, the trust was there to protect, again, both sides of the family.
Not to interrupt you, Jeff, so you were concerned that one spouse passes away, that all of the assets stay in trust for that surviving spouse's lifetime, where that surviving spouse doesn't really have the ability to change who it goes to or where it goes, and then it ultimately goes equally to all of your children.
Correct. That's how the trust is is situated right now. So the trust is set up for the benefit of both of us. Once, if there's anything left at the end of both of our lifetimes, then it's set that it has to be split equally among all the children or their descendants, depending on what happens to them and so on. So it was really more of just like that, because it is a blended family, and, you know, if all the assets, some kids could be easily left out if they got alienated, or, you know, who knows what happens over 20 years, right?
Jeff, this is a great example. Your call is a great example of why people need to make sure that they work hand in hand with their attorney, and that you've disclosed all the assets, and that they make sure that you kind of follow the thread. And I encourage people to follow the thread. Jeff, I have another question that I have to take for someone. So I appreciate you calling in, and we'll try to wrap up with the elder law question as we go through the rest of the show as well. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you so much for calling. We had Carolyn from Sailorsburg call in as well. Carolyn's one of my regular callers. Thank you, Carolyn. She had a question about contingent beneficiary advice. She said there is a non-family member needed and also an executor of a will. So if we have a situation, Anthony, where we have, let's say, a couple who don't have children, and maybe they're not going to, you know, maybe they don't have siblings, so they have a non-family member as a contingent beneficiary. Is there anything that they would need to worry about or be concerned with, or in picking an executor? And what I want to mention about that is, because we have about 15 minutes left, we were going to talk about choosing an executor. In fact,
right. Well, that's two totally different things.
Yeah.
You're saying contingent beneficiary, I believe. Naming an unrelated party, but that has nothing to do with the executor.
Right.
So that contingent beneficiary is just going to, the person's going to get that asset directly.
Right.
It's not going to pass through the estate.
You can name whoever you want.
You can name whoever you want. Charity, it could be somebody unrelated, it could be somebody off the street.
And the contingent only comes into play if something happens to the primary.
Right. If the primary is not alive, then it goes to the contingent right. beneficiary.
Okay, so that's that.
Yep, and then the second part of the question had
an executor of a will. So we were going to cover that.
Right. Let's so that was one of my points here was who should I choose as an executor or trustee, executor and then also trustee in the same thinking. And a lot of times people will choose individuals that are close to them, family members, children, or usually spouse, children, siblings. Sometimes people are uncomfortable just having a child, or maybe they don't have anybody named, no individuals to name. So a lot of times people will name a corporate trustee, either a corporate alone or corporate serving as a co-trustee. I a lot of times suggest for families to have a corporate trustee because I believe that individuals don't know, first of all, how to invest the assets appropriately. Because when you have beneficiaries of a trust, you have lifetime beneficiaries versus remainder beneficiaries. There's a proper balance of how you have to invest the assets. And then there's also the tax reporting, the calculation of distributions. There's a lot that goes into it that corporate trustees know and individuals don't. And without the proper guidance, individuals, trustees could possibly get themselves into trouble.
Okay. Let's go back for a moment to the revocable living trust, which Jeff had kind of had alluded to earlier. But sometimes people think that they might need a living trust because they heard their friend or their neighbor say they needed a living trust. So can you talk briefly about that?
Right. A living trust, the sole purpose of the main purpose of a living trust is to avoid what's called probate. Now, each state has, the probate system in each state is different. Let me say this. Pennsylvania's probate system is not a very difficult system to navigate through. What is probate? Probate is the act of taking the will to the courthouse, having the will be admitted as the last will. The courthouse, the register of wills, is saying this is the last will of the person. Without anybody challenging it, it's going to be accepted as long as it meets all the formalities. Then the court supervises what assets are part of the estate that is passing through the will, assuming there is a will, and they want to supervise the taxes are paid, and then ultimately the assets are distributed after all debts and expenses have been paid. So it's really that court supervision of the estate process. Having a living trust is in a way outside of that. Now, Pennsylvania has recently adopted the Uniform Trust Act, and a lot of states have adopted a form of the Uniform Trust Code. Pennsylvania's is called the Pennsylvania Uniform Trust Act, and that is an effort to crack down on some of the abuses that were happening with trusts because they were completely outside of the quote probate system, and now we have a body of statutory law that governs trusts. Is it always a good idea to have a living trust? Some clients, yes, it's a good idea. Sometimes it's not necessary. There was a lot of companies that were going around trying to sell these trusts no matter what, and really the persons that they were selling it to didn't really need it. It wasn't really saving anything. They were actually probably paying more money to set it all up than they were really going to save in the end anyway when they passed away. So
a blended family is a great example of where we might need a trust.
That might be, or a lot of times I use it when clients have out-of-state real estate, so we don't have to probate in another state, say New Jersey or wherever you own your other property.
Great idea, because then that avoids the probate in that foreign state.
That's correct.
Someone's not having to travel there, et cetera. We have still a few more minutes, and I'm not going to even give the phone number. Well, I can say the phone number if people want to pledge, but because we're going to run out of time for questions. 610-758-8810. Oh, we did have another question come in. Oh, we have a caller. We have Alan on line one. Alan, can you hear us? Alan's going to be coming on in just a moment, I think. Alan, are you there?
Yes, I am, Laurie.
Hi. How can we help you?
I am an old man. I'm a widower. I have an adult son. I do not have a will. I don't have any type of living trust. I don't have any type of advanced health care directives. I don't have a lot of money, but I have things I assume are going to exceed to my son. Do I need a will? Do I need some sort of advanced health care directive. One object I have some stocks that actually are still in my name and my deceased wife's name. What do I need to do to prepare so I make sure everything gets to my son?
My advice to you would be to consult with an attorney.
Okay.
To sit down where they can.
Second question.
Yeah, to sit down and review the assets that you do have, and that your family members and who you want to leave your assets to, and
okay.
It will allow you to name the persons one that'll be beneficiaries, two that will administer your estate when you do pass away. And also, you mentioned about
now would that be my son or
if you are not married and your son is your only child under
right.
Pennsylvania law, he'd be entitled to serve as the administrator of your estate.
Right. Okay.
But it makes it a little smoother if you do it ahead of time and work with him, and if you find your son is competent to handle that position, and if your son's competent to inherit these assets. Then it's certainly a conversation you'd want to have. But by not doing anything, it just kind of makes it. What people don't realize is when someone dies, there's enough that you have to kind of process and go through. And you want to give someone the opportunity to grieve and do what they need to do. That it's kind of nice if you kind of have these loose ends tied up before anything happens.
There was an article in the Express Times of last Sunday about estate planning for singles. Now, as a widower, I consider myself a single, and I know he's going to get my house and whatever else I have, but I thought, maybe I better make sure this procedure is a bit smoother.
Mm-hmm.
What type of attorney, experience or whatever, what should I look for in an attorney?
Well, I mean, I think you need an attorney that just understands the estate tax laws and prepares wills and powers of attorneys and health care.
And your health directives.
Yeah, health directives on a regular basis.
Should I have a power of attorney?
You should. In your case, a power of attorney might be the most important document because a power of attorney would allow you to name your son to act on your behalf, because without that,
okay.
He has no right to act on your behalf.
If I have a health problem or whatever, or
if you became incapacitated.
Somehow I'm incapacitated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you should ask. So the first thing I should do is think about power of attorney and then go on to the will and the other.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, and Alan, it's just a good exercise to go through anyway, because the attorney's going to ask you to kind of take an inventory of all your assets. And it's just a good exercise, and I think you'll definitely benefit from it. Okay. Thank you for calling, Alan. We appreciate it. And good luck. And Anthony Rahuba is an attorney and does estates, and he does a good job. So thank you for calling. Folks, we are continuing our discussion with the top 10 estate planning ideas. So we talked about a number of them. Anthony, I'm not sure we're even going to get through the rest of them, but go ahead. Tell me your most important ones.
I'm going to try to cover these somewhat quickly.
Okay.
One of the questions I get most often is, should I give my assets now? Should I leave them when I die? And a lot of times people will call and say, I just want to give my real estate or my property to my kids now. And, the process of doing that is very simple. We prepare a deed. However, you have to take into consideration all of the tax consequences of doing so. Or, you might avoid inheritance tax by giving it now because you're not leaving it at death. However, you're giving that person the cost basis in the property that you just gave them, meaning that they own it at what you paid. So if they sell it, they might have a capital gain tax. The other thing, too, is medical assistance. When you give assets, and they say if you needed to go into a nursing home and you need it and you don't have assets to pay, well, they're going to look at what gifts you made in the last 5 years, and then that could possibly disqualify you. So there's a lot of other things that you have to consider, including, do you need the money to live? How are you going to pay for your own care? What if you don't need nursing home, but you still need money to live? You don't want to give everything away. So you want to make sure that you have enough to survive on. I guess my next point would be, one of the things to consider is special needs children with disabilities, grandchildren with disabilities. Very important not just to have a will or trust leaving assets or a life insurance policy or retirement plan, leaving assets directly to those children or grandchildren. You could cause them to lose the benefits programs that they're receiving if you end up giving them assets that would disqualify them, because a lot of these programs are resource-based, meaning that If they own the asset, the government looks at, okay, what assets do they own? Oh, they own an account with $100,000. Why? We don't need to pay for it. We don't need to provide the program to them because they can pay for it themselves. But there's ways to set up trust, and we do that all the time to preserve the benefits that they're receiving and also allow those assets to be held and supplement the benefits they're receiving. So it's important if you have children, grandchildren with disabilities to review and sit down with an attorney and review all of that. Next point, which is actually my ninth idea, question, things to think about, is if you're a business owner and you own assets and other assets, and you own, of course you have a business, and you have children that are in the business as opposed to not in the business, what we do is we sit down and go over, how do we equalize this? If I have a child that's very involved in the business, I might want to leave him the business. However, I want to treat my other children equally and fairly. So we want to make sure that there's ways to segregate assets and pass assets to those children or grandchildren possibly, and make sure everybody's treated fairly. There's also ways to create non-voting stock, which gets a little too technical for today, but there's ways to do certain things like that where you can still give them an interest in the business, but no real control of the business. Say they can share in the profits of the business, but not really have any say. My final point, I guess, question would be, don't overlook powers of attorney. Our last caller had mentioned about the power of attorney and should he have a power of attorney. Pennsylvania actually just recently came out with a new statute, a power of attorney statute, and it's really an effort to crack down on the abuses that have been going on with powers of attorney. I can't tell you the amount of times I've had people call where, you know, they have a sibling or somebody that is taking money from mom or dad, stealing money, buying groceries, doing whatever they want basically with mom and dad's money, not using it for mom or dad's benefit. And the other children don't really know what's going on until after the fact. So then we're just going back and trying to go after that to get the money repaid. Having a power of attorney, you name that person. The new law makes you say specifically what authority you want to grant them as for gifting, changing beneficiaries. You have to specifically state that. Very important to have that document. And as I said to the last caller, as a child or even a spouse, you don't automatically, under PA law, have the ability to act for your spouse or parent. There's no statute that says, oh, you're the child, you can make financial decisions for your parent. What you have to do is go through a guardianship proceeding. And let me tell you, you don't want to do that if you can avoid it. It's costly, it's time-consuming, and you might not even have the person that you would really want to handle your finances be the person appointed. So have a power of attorney, and that alleviates all of that. And sometimes that's even more critical than a person's will, to be honest. And a lot of times when I meet with clients, the first thing I say, well, not the first thing I should say, at the end of the meeting, what I'll say is, you know, with your you have children, oh, they're 18, they're 20, 19, they're in college. You know what? I would suggest they have a power of attorney, because if they're at college and they get injured, they fall, they do something, well, guess what? You don't have the ability to act for your own child. If they're 18, they're an adult. You don't have the ability to do anything financially for them. Yeah. You can't do anything. So having the power of attorney, even for children, like for a younger person, might be more important than a will, in fact.
You know, I think you brought up a good point about if you end up having to go through any kind of guardianship proceeding, the time and the cost involved with that, all because maybe someone was nervous about getting a will prepared, written, maybe nervous about meeting with an attorney, worrying that it's going to cost a lot of money. But, you know, law firms are used to doing these. Mm-hmm. They work efficiently. They give the clients a checklist, a questionnaire to go through. If you do your homework before you get in front of the attorney, that can help abate some of the costs that you might think you'd be incurring with the time.
And let me say one other thing. With the new law, one of the things that scares me is people use these form powers of attorney, LegalZoom, whatever document you can find online, that scares me. Because using those forms, it might not be, one, it might not be up to date with what Pennsylvania law says. And this will go with any state. If you live in New Jersey and you're listening, New Jersey has their own statute, so you want to make sure you're complying with their law. But don't use a form.
Well, in particular, especially for people in Pennsylvania and New Jersey, because we have a very different inheritance tax system than most of the states in the country. Pennsylvania and New Jersey both have inheritance tax that most of the states had done away with. So in particular, residents here or people who have property in either of these states have very special considerations, and sometimes those canned programs don't cover that. So it's really important to kind of meet with an attorney. And even if you get one of those documents, if you're not funding your trust properly or not doing your asset titling properly, that software is not going to tell you, oh, did you do your asset titling properly? Anthony, thank you so much for being here. Anthony, how do people reach you?
Thank you, Lori. People reach me by my phone number is 610-797-9000. Again, 610-797-9000. Our website is www.flb, that's Fitzpatrick Lentz Buba, FLB, law, LAW.com.
Anthony, thanks so much. It was a lot of fun. I felt like we were trying to cram in a bunch of ideas, folks. You can't imagine how much more complicated this can get.
Yeah, I'm sorry for it felt like I was speeding through the last three, but I did want to get all those points across to the audience.
And that's okay, but that just demonstrates how much is involved and how much the information there is to cover and why you need good advice when you're embarking on your estate planning, but it's all worth it and giving the peace of mind to your loved ones. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Neil. Last minute tax planning tips next week, and those tax tips that can wait and those that can't. Thank you, listeners, for doing any pledging during our Christmas pledge drive, our holiday pledge drive, our December pledge drive, and you can still get those tax deductions before year end by contributing. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.